Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Detroit and Southwest Chicago, and earned a BA in journalism from Marquette University. From 1995 to 2018, he worked for the Chicago Sun-Times and then the Chicago Tribune. And since 2019, he's been the development director of Word on Fire Ministries, which is a ministry that harnesses goodness, truth, and beauty to draw people into or back to the Catholic faith. His name, John Barron. And we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything is Possible, and we're talking to John Barron, who grew up in Detroit, and then later the family moved to Southwest Chicago. John, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Hey, Jack, thank you very much for having me. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Can we start by talking about your childhood, your mom and your dad, please?
Yeah, you know, our family is from Chicago, the north side of Chicago, and they spent virtually their entire lives there. My dad was in the wholesale food business, worked for a company for 45 years called John Sexton & Company, which has been since taken over by a number of other entities, and it's been subsumed now into U.S. Foods. You might see their trucks on the highway, a big conglomerate. But we were on the north side of Chicago, and I was born there. And then at about age four, my parents made the then radical move. Decision to move to Michigan. My father was had the opportunity to be transferred with this food company to run the branch that they had there in Detroit. So in about 1963, myself, my younger brother and sister, and my parents all took the plunge, and we ended up in Birmingham, Michigan.
All right. What's the biggest thing you learned from Mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from Dad?
You know, I think they were like most or many from their generation. They were, just stalwart members of the community, always responsible, always maintaining maintaining their citizenship, for lack of a better term. You know, they were active in the community, they were active in their church, they were active in the neighborhood, all of that good stuff, and just responsibility and stalwartness, going with the flow, and then occasionally when the opportunity arised, not shying away from taking a chance, which is again what we did, what they did when we moved to Detroit.
So, as a youngster, you were Tiger fans. Then when you went back to Chicago, did we go with the Cubs?
my family was from the north side, and, we figured out my mother, who just died last year at age 101, we figured that she was first at Wrigley Field in about 1926. So she was, both my parents were diehard Cub fans. And when we moved to Detroit, it was a shock to the system, especially my mother's, she did not even recognize the American League. You know, she had no truck with the American League at all. And that was her only choice when we were in Detroit. So she, along with everybody else, became Tiger fans. And, I was age 5 through 9 when we were in Birmingham, and this was the mid-60s. And, of course, the Tigers were a great team at that point. And they won the World Series in 68 just as we were leaving town. So it was very, very exciting. And the Tigers, became an incredible part of myself and my brother's lives. You know, we were running around in mini Tiger uniforms, and we were at the stadium as much as we could be. We got a collie. And what did we name it? Tiger. So it's safe to say that we were obsessed with the Tigers at that point. But, as a little kid in Detroit, it was kind of a kind of a wonderland. You know, Birmingham is now and was then a lovely town, and we had the opportunity to, you know, get around the city a little bit. I was a little kid, but I remember the marveling at the Fisher Building, even way back when. I'd never seen anything so beautiful. I think we took a trip once downtown to the Adams Theater, and I had never been in such a big and splendorous a place before. I think we went to the State Fair a couple of times, and we were able. I'm able to say that I was able to see the Supremes. You know, fresh from the Ed Sullivan Show, where I mainly knew them. And you know, we had some opportunities to go across to Canada, to Windsor, which, as a little kid, to say you're in a foreign country, that was kind of mind blowing. I was just in Birmingham a couple of weeks ago, it's amazing what's gone on in that town over the decades. But I'm amazed to see that Jack's Car Wash is still in downtown Birmingham. That was a memorable trip that we would make once a month to Jack's Car Wash, and it's still there. And it must be a car wash situated on the most expensive real estate in America.
All right. You got a BA in journalism from Marquette University, and then you get, in 1980, you get hired by Cranes Communications. Talk about that 15-year career.
So Cranes Communications, people in Detroit know. It's been there for, you know, quite a while. It's kind of co-headquartered in Detroit. They are known in Detroit for a longtime publisher of automotive news and, of course, Cranes Detroit Business. I was lucky enough right out of college to get hired by Crane's Chicago Business. Before there was a Crane's Detroit Business, there was a Crane's Chicago Business. That had started in about 1978 or so. So it was about a year and a half old when I was fortunate enough to get hired there. And while I didn't know anything particularly about business or wasn't that interested in it, a chance to work on a consumer publication in a major metro area was just a terrific opportunity. And I was an editor there and did a little bit of writing, but was primarily on the editing side of things, and living on the north side of Chicago. And it was you know, pretty much the life of Riley for a young person. The world was at our feet. And then in about, you know, 1984 or so, Cranes bought the City Magazine for Metro Detroit. At the time, it was called Monthly Detroit. It eventually became Detroit Monthly. And there was an opportunity that came up to move some people from Chicago, if we wanted to Detroit. And, you know, I was interested in magazine writing, and having grown up a little bit in Detroit, I knew that its reputation at that time notwithstanding, that there was a great life to be had in Detroit. So I seriously considered the opportunity. My wife was much more hesitant than I was. You know, we were 25 years old at that point, living in, like I say, the north side of Chicago. Terrific lifestyle. All of our friends were right there. We didn't have to own a car or anything. And suddenly I'm thinking about moving to Detroit. But she kind of went along with it. And I remember trying to figure out where we were going to live. And what did I know? I just knew Birmingham. So I took her by car out to Birmingham. And, you know, she was very, very skeptical. But we had a great time in what I would call phase two of Detroit. And both of my kids were born there. And we try to get back as much as we can.
We're talking to John Barron. When we come back, we'll ask him about the chapter of his life that he was employed by the Chicago Sun-Times. And I'm Jack Rasulin, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasulin. We're with John Barron. And from 1995 to 2009, he held various senior leadership positions with the Chicago Sun-Times. John, that chapter, please.
Yeah, so, you know, it's about 1994, 95. Things were going okay in Detroit, but there were certain signs of trouble in the news industry. You know, we were thinking, okay, this could go south here, you know, pretty pretty quickly, the writing was on the wall, and we thought, well, you know, where would we want to go? And all signs pointed to Chicago, where, again, all of our friends were and what we knew best. And I had some friends at the at both papers, the Tribune and the Sun-Times, and made some contacts and was fortunate enough to get hired on at the Sun-Times in a new position that they had just developed, covering, what was it, advertising, sports as a business, the sports industry, and restaurants and entertainment, which was, you know, kind of in my wheelhouse. But I thought this would be a good chance to get into the paper back in Chicago. And I was in that job for about 4 months and was eventually put in charge of one of the entertainment sections. And I eventually became the features editor. And then I became the managing editor, and I eventually became the editor-in-chief and the general manager, and then eventually the publisher of the paper. And I don't know whether that speaks as much to my talent and ambition as it does to, you know, kind of the turmoil that was beginning to affect that industry. You know, we had lots of comings and goings. There's a lot of opportunity for promotion when there's a battle going on, and I was fortunate enough to ride some of that wave. But troubles in the industry notwithstanding, just a great fun opportunity. There's nothing like the newspaper business. You almost can't say that anymore. People don't know newspapers, but there's nothing like the news or media business in terms of, you know, really being in a mission-driven industry, working with some of the smartest, most creative, funny, idiosyncratic, knowledgeable people you can imagine. That's true in media all over the place. And at that point, the newspapers were making a tremendous impact. I mean, when I got to the Sun-Times, we had a circulation of 600,000, another 500,000 on Sundays. The Tribune was bigger than that, but the impact of newspapers and the direct contact that the consumers had with them, you know, delivered to their home every day, and it was part of their habit. You knew that the work you were doing was finding an audience. So it was a very, very, very terrific time. But as I alluded to, you know, lots of trouble in that business, and it had to do with the internet, which affected everybody. It had to do with the fact that when the internet came alive, say in 94 or 95, most newspapers elected to put their content up on their website for free. And that seemed like a good idea at the time. You know, hey, we'll attract as many people to the website as we do to the paper product, and we'll be able to sell advertising the way we always did. And it worked out that way for a little while, but then with the advent of the Googles, of course, and the Facebooks, this is common knowledge at this point, those became the places where the advertising market ran to. And it's been, you know, kind of a steady decline since then. I mean, the papers in Chicago are putting out, you know, terrific websites still, but in terms of the circulation of their product, that hardcore measurable, it's a shadow of what it once was. And of course, we lived through interesting times with both newspapers. Went through bankruptcies in the late early 2000s, the early part of this century. 2008, 2009, 2010, the Sun-Times and the Tribune were in bankruptcy. And in both cases, actually, it didn't have that much to do with the underlying business. We had some what turned out to be felonious owners of Canadian owners of the Sun-Times who got into trouble for some self-dealing. And that caused our bankruptcy. The Tribune was dealing with a new owner who had taken it over in a massively complex leveraged buyout, and when the industry started to falter, that deal faltered. And so, you know, it was interesting that both papers lived through bankruptcies and managed to come out on the other end. And both of them have new owners, vastly different ownership schemes than they had before. The Tribune is owned by a hedge fund at this point, and The Sun-Times is now under the rubric of Chicago Public Media, the national public radio outlet here in Chicago. So the Chicago Sun-Times is a nonprofit at this point. It's just such a vastly, vastly different landscape than it was. But it was the most fun I've ever had, you know, working on a major metropolitan daily.
We're talking to John Barron, and his parents had two sons. So, John, let's talk about your brother, please.
Yeah. Well, you know, my brother...
Not quite as famous as you, John, but we got to talk about the guy.
No, for those that don't know, my brother is Robert Barron, also known as Bishop Robert Barron, and he is situated up right now in the Diocese of Winona, Rochester in Minnesota. But what he's probably best known for is his nonprofit apostolate called Word on Fire. And Word on Fire has been around now for just about 25 years. And it all grew out of the fact that my brother is a very gifted preacher, a very gifted theologian, somebody who is able to connect with people on a very smart level. He's able to tell the story of the church, the story of the good news, the story of the gospels in a very smart, engaging way that is appealing and inspiring to people. And, you know, he was a young priest or a younger priest 25, 30 years ago, and he was situated at Mundelein Seminary, where he taught up in the far northern suburbs of Chicago. And he would say Mass in Winnetka, Illinois, every Sunday. He'd make the trek over there. And the people who were in the pews were sort of just amazed by these sermons that he would come up with. You know, people that think they have heard all the readings all their life, and they know them, they understand them, were suddenly confronted with this preacher, my brother, who was dazzling them with his interpretations of the gospel that, again, were smart, engaging. He would throw in history. He'd throw in literature. He'd throw in word etymologies. It was, you know, his sermons are pretty dazzling. And these folks in Winnetka, after Mass, would say to him, you know, you're good, and you're too good for just us. What else do you want to do? And he said, well, we could probably take this to TV. And WGN at that point was called the WGN Superstation, the TV version of WGN. And I don't know, they came up with a big chunk of change, and we were able to get his sermons on WGN. And it all began to build. And he said, you know, what I'd really love to do is create a PBS-level documentary on Catholicism, you know, call it a 10-part series. It's not going to be a history of Catholicism, but it'll be an exploration of Catholicism, its tenets, its key personalities, how it's expressed through art and literature, places where Catholicism has grown. He had this idea for a 10-part series that he would host, and it would eventually be accompanied by a book. And some of these early donors said, you know, that sounds like a good idea. How do we help? And he said, well, help me pay for the first episode. And with that seed money, long story short, they were able to gradually put together this 10-part series where they traveled the world to look at Catholicism from a variety of different perspectives and through a variety of different lenses. And it, you know, really created this beautiful, beautiful thing that eventually aired on about 98% of the public TV stations in America. It's called the Catholicism Series. It's a staple of EWTN. It's sold scads and scads of copies to people who were interested in Catholicism, as well as high schools, colleges, grade schools that used it in teaching and are still using it in teaching. And that's really what put Word on Fire on the map.
We're talking to John Barron. If you want to learn more, www.wordonfire.org. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything's Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with John Barron, and we're talking about his brother, Bishop Robert Barron, who in 2010 became the first priest to to have a national show on a secular TV network since the 50s with another man named Bishop Fulton J. Sheen. And recently, Bishop Barron spent a little time with Pope Francis. And I believe Pope Francis said, "Are you the modern-day Bishop Fulton J. Sheen?" John, that's tall cotton. Okay, let's talk about Word on Fire Institute, et cetera, the offerings today.
From the beginning, Jack, you know, I just sort of sketched out, how it all came together, and it was really just trying out different things. The Catholicism series did put things on the map, and that gave a firmer financial footing to this new nonprofit. And whatever they made from the Catholicism series, they would plow into the next project. But to get to where we are right now, Word on Fire is really a global apostolate. It reaches millions of people around the world. It's amazing how it all started in a pulpit in suburban Chicago, but now it's followed by people all around the world. And the offerings, you know, continue to include my brother's homilies, very popular every week. Those are recorded on video and audio. They put out a lot of videos, films, podcasts. We send out his daily gospel reflections to over 500,000 people every day. So the ministry remains very vibrant. Just in the last couple of years, it has become a major Catholic book publisher. We used to do, you know, one or two titles a year, and now we're doing about 40 a year, with plans to expand that. I guess one of the bigger expansions was about a half a dozen years ago, when he had the idea to create something called the Word on Fire Institute, which was an idea to create kind of a community, a Word on Fire Plus, if you will, of people that wanted to go a little bit deeper into the ethos of Word on Fire to become a little bit more formal members of the Word on Fire community. And the Word on Fire Institute was created, on the one hand, an online learning portal, all sorts of classes and courses and instruction to help you become a little bit better evangelist in your own life. Some heady content along the way as well for people that want to go a little bit deeper. We publish a quarterly journal called Evangelization and Culture, which is one of the most beautiful magazines I've ever seen in my life. But again, it is about evangelization and its intersection with culture. We're also thinking that the Word on Fire Institute, my brother wants it to become a Catholic think tank, to bring more Catholic thought into the marketplace, to generate more Catholic thought and opinion. I think down the road he wants to turn this into a university of some sort, but that's probably a long way off. But in the meantime, we had no idea how this was going to fly, whether it was going to fly, would people find it interesting, worthwhile, et cetera. And about 6 years into it, we're at about 27,000 subscribers right now who are members of the Word on Fire Institute and are going a little bit deeper with the theology and the evangelization of Word on Fire. And you know, where it goes from here, we're developing. I think there'll be much more content, much more conferences, probably a little bit more academic material. They published an academic journal for the first time about 6 or 7 months ago, and we're amazed at the response to this. So it's a multifaceted offering at this point that allow people to get a little bit more involved with Word on Fire at whatever level they want to be.
If you want to learn more, www.wordonfire.org. We're talking to John Barron, and since 2019, he's been the development director of Word on Fire Ministries. Some numbers, John. YouTube videos have received over 187 million views. 500,000 people daily get the daily email on the gospel reflection. Talk about that daily reflection, please.
Yeah, the daily gospel reflections are sent via email to people who, of course, sign up for them, and they are a brief, you know, not a full sermon, but they are a brief reflection on the meaning, the point, of the daily gospels, and they are one of the key entry points where people get into Word on Fire or follow Bishop Barron. It's relatively easy to, I mean, it's very easy to sign up, and they're a very easy thing to take a glance at every day, and that has been from the beginning one of the most popular offerings. What we're, you know, also amazed by, and every time I look at these numbers, they're probably a little behind, but my brother has something like four and a quarter million followers on social media, which is, you know, just sort of amazing for a priest and a bishop. We joke that seems to be about put him second to the Pope in terms of Catholics being followed on social media, and that we're catching up on the Pope at this point. We know that his sermons are among the most popular, if not the most popular, in the English-speaking world, people who tune into those either on audio or video. As you said, you know, about 180 million views on YouTube, these videos. He's also proud of the fact he's got about 1.5 million subscribers on video, people that are getting everything that, you know, gets produced. And, you know, we're also very pleased and amazed by the fact that we have sold or distributed about 6 million books over the years. It just shows that there's a hunger for smart evangelization and, you know, a willing and wanting audience for this kind of stuff. In that 6 million figure, we did a couple of books, my brother's books, that we kind of helped distribute free or as low cost as possible to parishes across the country. The most recent one was called This Is My Body, which was a book about the Eucharist and the Eucharistic revival that my brother is one of the leaders of at this point. And we thought, you know, his take on the Eucharist and the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist was an important message to get out, especially at this time. And we made it available for, you know, basically the cost of shipping to parishes across America. And I think we were able to get it into the hands of about 1.5 million people. So that was kind of stunning and just great direct evangelization.
We're talking to John Barron, and I'm Jack Crisula. And this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Okay, John, we have to add up the time and see how much we have left.
You've been listening to your inspirational fireside chat, Anything Is Possible, for nearly 20 years.
This is Anything Is Possible, and I'm Jack Crisula.
But what has Jack been up to lately? Search at AIP Speaker Series and find out. Jack has interviewed thousands of historical voices, some of whom have offered him their philosophy of life, like Tom Izzo.
And Tom writes, "Work hard, persistence always wins out, discipline is the highest form of love, stay humble."
The great Ernie Harwell.
"My aim is to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with God."
And the voices of our generation.
"I am reassured continuously that His unfathomable love and mercy are the greatest gifts of my life, and my constant source of strength, reassurance, and guidance. His Holiness, Pope Francis."
At AIP Speakers Series is the YouTube channel where all of these jewels can be heard, including some of Anything Is Possible's greatest guests.
And we're with Mitch Albom.
The Little Liar is really a book about truth and lies and the price we pay when we lie.
This is Anything Is Possible, and with Tom Watson.
My father loved to play with the pros at the club, developed a very quick friendship with Stan and played some golf with him, and then he would ask me to play golf with him and Stan.
Our guest this week was born with a rare disorder characterized by the absence of arms and legs. His name, Nick Vujicic.
Something that every human being actually deals with, Jack. It's the choice of continuing to believe or giving up.
And recordings of the AIP Speaker Series events at St. John's Resort. Go to YouTube and search at AIP Speaker Series. It's free. And remember,
anything is possible.
Spohom. I'm Jack Crisula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to John Barron, the Development Director of Word on Fire Ministries, www.wordonfire.org. You mentioned that 500,000 people get the daily gospel reflection. It's free. A lot of this stuff is free. All right?
Oh, yeah.
I read it every day religiously. Your vocabulary and your brother's vocabulary is unbelievable. When you were kids, what did your mom and dad feed you to give you all of these magical words?
Just good teachers, you know, along the way. Catholic education, you know, for both of
Fenwick
them.
High School, too. Fenwick High School, I think. So.
Yeah, Fenwick High School, Dominican High School here in Oak Park, Illinois, where I live. And, you know, was proud to go there. And it was at Fenwick High School where my brother was introduced to the most famous Dominican, Thomas Aquinas. And he was introduced to Thomas Aquinas in a theology class when he was a freshman. And he's never looked back. I mean, it just set his mind on fire. And Aquinas has been an inspiration since he was an early teenager. But in fact, my brother's motto is Episcopal motto is a phrase from Thomas Aquinas. So great teachers, you know, Jack, from the beginning.
We're talking to John Barron. We're talking about his brother, Bishop Robert Barron. He's known as the Bishop of Social Media, the Bishop of the Internet. And it's been said that Bishop Robert Barron does with words what Michelangelo did with a paintbrush. All right, you talked about speaking of books. Tell us about the Word on Fire Bible, please.
Yeah, the Word on Fire Bible is perhaps the most ambitious undertaking the ministry has ever taken on. The idea was, you know, lots of people know the Bible, know about the Bible, have dipped into the Bible, but the Bible is a unique and a unique collection of books, and it's a library unto itself. And you know, my brother has always felt that the Bible is off-putting to some people. This strange language and these strange stories and the order in which the books are put together, et cetera. Is there a way to help introduce people to the Bible in a more understandable, engaging manner? And there have been a ton of Bibles that have been study Bibles with all sorts of footnotes and that kind of thing. Those are kind of work to get through in and of themselves. But his conception was, what if we approached it with the Word on Fire ethos, which is often leading with beauty. And what if we were able to put together a Bible that was very welcoming, that was loaded with all sorts of wonderful color art depicting the scenes and the imagery of the Bible stories. And what if we were able to very comfortably accompany the text of the Bible with writings, interpretations, analysis from the great minds of theology from the last 2,000 years? These include some of the early church fathers, some of the great theologians from over the years, some of our great Catholic writers, G.K. Chesterton, Flannery O'Connor, right up through the present, you know, current commentators such as my brother. And, you know, they put together volume one of this thing, which was going to just be on the Gospels. And they thought, well, you know, this looks great. And we hope that it will find an audience amongst people who have never looked at the Bible before. They sent me an advanced copy of this Bible. And I said, you know, you guys have printed 15,000 copies of this. You think it's only for people that have not read the Bible before, but I'm here to tell you, having taken one look at this, that everybody is going to want it. And the initial 15,000 copy order turned into something like 250,000 copies were sold of that gospel. Volume one, we call it the Gospels. And we have found a ready audience for the ensuing volumes. The second volume completed the New Testament. Then we started with the Old Testament. We have published volume three is on the Pentateuch, the opening books of the Old Testament. We've just published volume four, and we have three more to go. It'll be a seven-volume series when it's completed in about 3 years, and we have been very gratified that it's found such a big, welcoming audience, and that as we progress through the various volumes, that the that the interest has not slacked off at all. And it's a magnificent thing. I mean, I've had very little to do with it other than to look at it proudly, but it's a magnificent undertaking that is fascinating to watch as it unfolds.
And I second that statement. All right, we're talking to John Barron. Want to learn more? www.wordonfire.org. Next year, Word on Fire is going to celebrate its 25th anniversary. John, what's amazed you the most about Word on Fire these past 25 years?
Well, you know, as I've alluded to, Jack, I'm just, you know, watching my little brother, you know, accomplish these amazing things. And again, I first knew him as a priest preaching from pulpits in Chicago, and to think how that audience has grown so amazingly over the years, and that the audience has been so appreciative of what he and his colleagues have been able to do with Word on Fire, and that the ambitions of my brother and others have been able, through the kindness of our audience and the kindness of our donors, the generosity of our donors, that many of those ambitions have been able to reach fruition. And you know, it's just amazing. And one of the things, I come out of media, right? Word on Fire is kind of a media company. We publish books, we publish, you know, podcasts, articles, films, all that kind of stuff. And one of my jobs as an old timer at Word on Fire, we have so many young people working there, is to remind them that the work that they are doing and the response it is receiving is not normal. You know, that most media companies, most companies don't have this kind of a track record with the audience engagement they have, the increasing size of the audience, the fact that virtually everything we put out, you know, finds its audience and then some. It really is amazing. So, you know, I sit back and realize that my brother's a smart guy. He was always a good preacher, but we're just delighted and gratified that he has been able to find such a large, ready, engaged, generous, and growing audience.
John Barron, you're too humble. You're a huge force in this ministry, so keep up the great, great work.
Well, thanks, Jack, and thank you for your interest. You've been a good friend of the ministry as well.
Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Fasulo. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol.
Believe in yourself.